It's time for overtime.
Stop what you're doing and listen.
In the world of sports, it's all about the playmakers in today's headlines, from locals to the pros, with interviews from local standouts and sports all-stars across the country that will have you talking.
Here we go.
And the punt is blocked. It's free.
Hear from coaches to players, sports analysts, and broadcasters who are a part of the action every day. Overtime, now on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you over the hump and rolling downhill into the weekend on a Wednesday, May 13th edition of Overtime. These weeks sure do go by pretty darn fast this time of year. Last night of the NBA postseason, we saw the Spurs beat up and run over the Minnesota Timberwolves 126-97. Rest of the way is up for debate whether the T-Wolves will have a punch or two back to the Spurs coming up in game number 6 from Minneapolis. We'll dive into that and more coming up soon. NFL talk. The Green Bay Packers have added 2 external free agents on waivers as of yesterday. We'll introduce you to both of them, talk about the current state and makeup of the Packers roster, and also get you the latest in terms of scheduling leaks. The boat will stop leaking. It'll be completely underwater with the schedule tomorrow, as they'll release it officially from the National Football League tomorrow night. Full schedule breakdown for the Vikings and the Packers and your team of choice coming up on the Friday edition of the show. NFL talk in middle of this hour, and then Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report talks about winners of the NFL draft, the best landing spot for a mid-round quarterback, and so much more at the end of this Wednesday, May 13th edition of Overtime. Let's get right into the scorecard. We start in those NBA playoffs. The 2 teams remaining in the Western Conference active right now, the Spurs and the T-Wolves, as OKC waiting in the wings for the Western Conference Finals. Spurs win last night in Game 5 on their home floor, 126-97. Victor Wembanyama, another impressive, absurd performance. 27 points, 17 rebounds. P.J. Tucker says, you love to see it.
As a vet, I love that in my young guy. To see him focus right out the gate, being aggressive, being assertive. His basketball IQ is off the charts. You know, he makes the right play almost every time. But I just love his aggressiveness the entire night in all facets of the game.
And broadly, for the Spurs last night, they shot 53% from the floor. Big rebounding advantage. And both teams pretty loosey-goosey with the basketball, double-digit turnovers. But the Spurs, without a doubt, the better team last night on their home floor as the series shifts back to Minneapolis. Now, what are we expecting moving forward? Everyone coming out today saying Oklahoma City, San Antonio, please, in the Western Conference Finals.
The NFL rivalries we have, some people are like, I'm sick of Chiefs and Ravens. I'm sick of Chiefs and Bills. Give me something new. You want a new rivalry in sports? Assuming San Antonio gets by Minnesota, get used to this. San Antonio, Oklahoma City is not going to be good. It's going to be great. And we're going to get it year after year after year. And they are brilliant organizations that are going to be able to churn in a way that is unheard of.
And it is pretty darn crazy. It's a little sad because right now we're at this little miniature inflection point for Minnesota. I'm not saying that they're going to fall off a cliff and not be in the conversation, but you don't want to be left behind. Minnesota felt like this team. Denver was there. You could obviously insert other squads. The Lakers have been there. Dallas, with the star power of Cooper Flagg, maybe they'll get there soon. The Western Conference, going to be pretty darn wide open. I had a neighbor tell me the other day, I can't wait until we're in the East. That'll be easy. We'll see about a possible conference change for Minnesota. You don't want to bank on a conference change needing to be the reason that you're at prominence, but certainly getting to an NBA Finals would be pretty sweet. Winning one, icing on the cake for Minnesota. We'll see about that moving forward. San Antonio taking a little bit firmer grip on the series, a 3-2 series lead, 126-97, the final last night. Tonight in the NBA, Cavs and the Pistons, 7 o'clock on ESPN. That series tied 2 games apiece. Detroit favored by 4.5 points. Let's talk about the team that the winner of that series will see. Alan Hahn of ESPN New York highlighting what makes this New York Knicks team this year, right now, just a little bit different than recent years.
Last year felt like when the Celtics series ended, that was the accomplishment of knocking off the team that, that really 100%. Felt like that was the dragon you had to slay. And then that game one bounce against the Indiana Pacers, just suddenly now you're on your heels and they never could recover from that incredible bounce and blowing that lead they had in game one. This year, there's a much different attitude coming out of that sweep against the Sixers. Not a sense of accomplishment whatsoever. A sense of, okay, we're back where we left off last year and now we understand where we are. There's a much different calm around this team and a perspective that it's the calluses, it's the losses, it's the buildup of knowing this is the window, this might be the time.
And that's Alan Hahn of ESPN New York. This might be the time for those New York Knicks. Also in the Eastern Conference, not in the postseason anymore, is the Boston Celtics. Jay Williams commenting on if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum can continue to coexist there in Beantown.
I have no problem with Jason Tatum talking about what some of his individual accomplishments that he wants to attain are, but when you ask a player, hey, what are your goals? As a leader, you always say, we want to win championships.
Mm-hmm.
I want to win three. I want to win four. You probably don't say six or seven like LeBron,
right.
But you say, like, I want to win championships.
For sure.
And when you start hearing about the individuality of it, and then you see that combined with things that have led over time with Jaylen Brown, you start wondering, like, that's it. Just it's naturally awkward between those two. Now, can they coexist? Potentially, if they have strong leadership. But a lot of times, organizations are the ones that pit the best players against each other.
And that's Jay Williams of ESPN talking about those two stars seeking to coexist, continuing to do so in Boston beyond this season. That's all for the NBA for now. Tonight, again, Cavs and Pistons, game number 5, 7 o'clock on ESPN. Detroit, moderately favored, 4.5-point favorite at DraftKings Sportsbook. Over to the NHL last night, 2 games went down. Buffalo scored a massive road win in game 4 over Montreal, 3-2 the final there. Identical score, but overtime included as Vegas takes a little bit bigger lead on Anaheim, 3-2 the final in overtime. Pavel Dorofeev, the game-winning goal as they take a 3-2 lead in the series. Tonight, the Avalanche looking to close out the Minnesota Wild in Denver. Wild at the Avs, 7 o'clock on TNT. Colorado leads the series 3-1, and they are a -220 favorite to slam the door tonight. Speaking of slamming the door, but a good thing for our area team, it was a winner-take-all game 5 last night here in Sioux Falls. For the Sioux Falls Stampede, they find a way to win it.
Into the corner, McCrane. Knocked away by Sokol. Gets it to McCrane. A wrist shot. He scores! Joey McCrane! 3-2 Stampede!
That netter for the Stampede with just a few minutes to go. A 3-2 final. Stampede beat the Fargo Force in the Western Conference Final. They're on to the Clark Cup Finals. That audio courtesy of the Sioux Falls Stampede on Twitter. Congrats to the Stampede. Coach Ryan Crothers, all the great young athletes, support staff, as they're dancing into the Clark Cup Finals, and they're looking for Clark Cup Championship number 4. Now, over to Major League Baseball, a really nice performance for Minnesota yesterday. The bats were not electric by any means in a 3-0 final, but Ryan Jeffers certainly contributed.
Hit well to left field. This is a no-doubter and a 2-run homer. Twins lead 3-0. Hung it. And Jeffers didn't miss it.
Jeffers in the bottom of the 5th helps Minnesota take that 3-0 lead. That was the final 3-0 because of how great the work was on the mound for one Bailey Ober yesterday.
Crowd is on its feet. And a ball hit towards first. Clemens has it. He'll flip to Ober. Fittingly stomps on the base. And Bailey Ober, magnificent. A complete game 2-hit shutout on 89 pitches. For Bailey Ober.
That's a rarity these days. Bailey Ober, part of the latest win for Minnesota. 19-23, the new record. Here's manager Derek Shelton on when he had an idea that Ober could go the distance yesterday.
Yeah, once we got through the 5th and he was real, I mean, I think he was like at 49 through 5. I was like, okay, you know, okay, let's go through 7. You know, I was trying to work ahead to 7 just because of the fact of the number of ups he had had and what he had done. But he was just, he kept being efficient. He kept getting the swing and misses. I mean, anytime you get a first pitch swing in the 9th for a pop-up, I think that helps out. But overall, I thought he did a nice job. Jeffers did a really good job going back and forth, and a good ball game to win.
That's Twins manager Derek Shelton. Minnesota 19-23. Other notables yesterday in the division, Cleveland beat the Angels 3-2. Detroit got beat up by the Mets on the road 10-2. And lastly in the division, Kansas City falls to the White Sox in Chicago 6-5 the final there. Today and tonight in Major League Baseball, getting underway in a moment, Angels and the Guardians from Cleveland, Rockies at Pirates, Tigers at Mets, Cubs at Braves, Royals visit the White Sox, Brewers host the Padres, Cardinals visit the A's, and the Twins do it again, hosting the Marlins. 6:40 start, 6 o'clock, your pregame coverage right here on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Over to the National Football League, rookie minicamps winding down, schedule release, drama, and rumors and leaks. That's what's going on this week as the official schedule released tomorrow night. Mike Tannenbaum talking about a sneaky team that could be in on A.J. Brown, the L.A. Rams. Could they enter the conversation with New England waiting for the deal to be in concrete at the beginning of next month?
It has to be something with a first-round pick. Now, is it going to be a 27 first-round pick? Is it going to be a 28 first-round pick? But I think the fact that it's out there the way it is tells me that Philadelphia is hoping for another offer. So, obviously, it's been widely reported he's going to go to New England, but does a team like the Rams, who feel like, hey, we're trying to win right now, you know, do they step up at the last minute and try to get them?
And we'll see about the Rams entering that conversation. I told you in hour number one, complete speculation on my part, but maybe there's a scenario in which this off-field distraction in New England with Mike Vrabel, Diana Rossini, and the fallout and the blowback from that, maybe that has them a little bit on shakier ground to where the organization portion, the front office says, you know what, we really like your mission, Mike. We want to give you this player, but we're going to kind of hold off on this, and maybe we'll wait and see about trade deadline deal or something of that nature. We're going to rescind our offer and wait. Again, reckless speculation, but the Patriots do have plenty of other wide receivers on that roster. They just signed Romeo Doubs to a big deal. They got Kayshon Booty. They got other guys that can certainly work. Kyle Williams, a recent relatively high draft pick in New England. They could also re-sign Stephon Diggs after he completely clears himself of the legal trouble. We'll see about New England. I still think it gets done. But if there is an opportunity, maybe it's in the wake of that offseason scandal with Mike Vrabel, Diana Rossini, and the blowback on the organization. Let's talk Aaron Rodgers. Evan Cohen says, I have no problem with Aaron Rodgers. I got a problem with the team, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Aaron Rodgers is unemployed. If you're unemployed, you report to no one. This is on them. I love the Steelers as an organization. I've gotten to know the Rooney family over the years. You can't find better people than the Rooney family. But it's on them. You're allowing him for the second straight year to hold your franchise hostage.
And again, they chose the head coach with the inclination and with the understanding that, you know what, Mike McCarthy loves Aaron Rodgers. We have Aaron Rodgers here. He's a free agent. Maybe we'll let Mike talk about him in the opening press conference. And Mike McCarthy says, I love Aaron Rodgers. Would love to have him back here as a 42-year-old free agent. And Rodgers was not bad last year. I love watching him play. I hope he comes back and suits up for Pittsburgh and goes and wins some games and has some more big moments on a Hall of Fame career and retires as one of the best to ever do it. But, big but here, the Steelers made their bed this way. Evan Cohen's absolutely right. This is not on Aaron Rodgers. He is what he is. He is who he is at this point. This is turning into the Brett Favre drama, the courtship of the offseason. You know, I'm not going to be a distraction. I'm not going to drag this out, but hey, watch me drag this out. Aaron Rodgers has taken forever to make a decision. Steelers should have said back in February, back in March, hey, Aaron, we're gonna send a plane out and we're going to pick you up. And we're going to talk about the future here with Pittsburgh. Give us an answer. Give us an inkling. Give us a clue. Let us know what you're thinking. You don't have to show up to mini camp, rookie mini camp, OTAs. You can come right at training camp, man. That's fine. Just let us know if we're in your plans, please. But they're not doing that. They still don't even know. The reports last week that he was in town and the signing was imminent, that came and went up in smoke. We're still waiting on Pittsburgh. It could get done at any moment. I hope it does so we can stop talking about it. But Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers, the courtship and the issue here is about the Steelers not being firm, not Rodgers continuing to be what he's been for the last 3, 4, 5 off seasons. Evan Cohen, nail on the head earlier on today. Lewis Riddick talking about the Minnesota Vikings. Is it J.J. McCarthy? Is it Kyler Murray? Is it Carson Wentz?
I said initially, remember, when they were flirting around with this possibility of signing him, that if they sign him, this isn't a competition. It's over for J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
Not necessarily because, you know, maybe they have thrown in the towel, but I think Kyler Murray's that good. And when Kevin O'Connell comes out and says, when you watch the tape, his skill set does fit what I do. Some people say, no, it doesn't. doesn't. He says it does. You know it's in his best interest to make this work out and make this work out in a big way. I think this could supercharge that offense.
There you go. Supercharge the offense that has some superstars on it. Again, Justin Jefferson, one of the best in the league. Jordan Addison, one of the best wide receiver twos in the NFL. You throw in Juwan Jennings, TJ Hawkinson, Aaron Jones, Damon Claiborne, Jordan Mason. That is a pretty darn good offense. We'll see about the offensive line and how healthy the quarterback situation can be because, yes, J.J. McCarthy is injury prone so far in his career. Kyler Murray also injury prone. We'll see how things work out for Minnesota. Bart Scott, we played the clip last hour. You want to listen back. Kyler Murray could be the best quarterback in the NFC North. I wouldn't bet on it. I wouldn't. But certainly tough to bet against because of the trajectory, possibly, of that offense in Minnesota. We will have to wait and see as we make our way through this offseason. A reminder, PGA Championship action begins tomorrow from Pennsylvania, runs through Sunday. French Open approaching in the world of tennis, May 23rd, the liftoff time, June 7th, the finale at Roland Garros. And then D2 softball, Augustana, an 8 seed. We'll meet number 1 seed Missouri Southern tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. D1 softball, South Dakota facing Nebraska Friday at 5:30 on ESPN+. And D2 baseball, Augustana, a 5 seed, meeting up with 4 seed Northwest Missouri State Thursday evening. That is a 6 o'clock go time. Last night, the Sioux Falls Stampede punched their ticket to the Clark Cup Final with a 3-2 win over the Fargo Force, claiming the title of Western Conference Champions of the USHL. The Herd saw scoring from Logan Renkowski 2 times and Joey Macrina. Opening frame tightly contested. The Force led after 1-1 as the Sioux Falls Stampede roar back with a 3-2 win and on to face Muskegon coming up. The Lumberjacks in the USHL Finals, a.k.a. the Clark Cup Final, as that series gets going Friday for Game 1, Saturday for Game 2, here in Sioux Falls, and then the following Friday, Saturday at Muskegon, and then Game 5 will be, if necessary, in Sioux Falls. Hope this happens. I know you want to sweep, but hope we can get a Game 5 winner-take-all Clark Cup Final at the Premier Center. Muskegon at Sioux Falls would be Tuesday, May the 26th, so roughly 13 days away from now, and you can view all the details at sfstampede.com, and tickets for the Stampede home games are available right now through Ticketmaster. After a historic run in Minneapolis of the Summit League Tournament, we continue with your ReliaBank headlines of the day by telling you about the Summit League Tournament champion USD Coyotes softball team. They're set for their NCAA tournament debut when they head to Lincoln to face four seed Nebraska in their tournament debut Friday at 5:30 on ESPN+. Bolin Stadium down in Lincoln seats quite a lot, 2,500 plus. Beth Mowens will be on the call, and the four seed heading into last week's Summit League tournament. USD won 4 games in 4 days to reach and win the conference's first ever conference title. Yotes are making their first NCAA tournament appearance, and they've played 2 NCAA tournament teams this year. Both games being close, 1-run losses at Grand Canyon, 1-0. And at Kansas, the Yotes lost 4-3, but they are white hot, confident, ready to rumble Friday, 5:30 on ESPN+. The Augustana Viking hockey program has announced its full regular season schedule earlier this week for next year, which includes 19 games to be played at home at Midco Arena. In the upcoming season, Augie will host 3 non-conference opponents, Duluth, Omaha, and Alaska Fairbanks. Season tickets are available right now at goaugie.com/tickets, and you can view the entire schedule at goaugie.com. Speaking of Augustana, Lainey Wienendahl of Augie Women's Golf was named All-NSIC First Team, announced by the conference yesterday afternoon. Mia Garcia of Augie Women's Tennis was named the NSIC Player of the Year. Certainly, a lot of great accolades there. GoAugie.com. Congratulations to Wienendahl and Garcia, both honored by the NSIC. And those are your ReliaBank headlines of the day for hour number 2. When we come back, it's all the NFL talk he can handle the rest of the way on a Wednesday. We start pretty darn close to home. The Green Bay Packers have added 2 future Hall of Famers, I hope, to the roster, 1 tight end, 1 cornerback as of yesterday off of waivers, which means they were recently cut by somebody else. We intro you to those two guys, and we also talk other news and nuggets from the National Football League, schedule leaks, and more before we welcome Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report to the program at about 12:40. Keep it locked and loaded. It's overtime. We continue on this Wednesday edition of the show next, right here on your Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Streaming live online and with the app, this is Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls Sports Leader.
Wednesday edition of Overtime, moving right along. Football talk the rest of the way. 35 minutes of football talk on the way. We start with the latest news from college and pro football. Dive into a conversation in about 15 minutes with our friend Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report, recapping the draft and more. Let's start with college football. Really good news to pass along here regarding a story we told you about earlier this week. Missouri running back Ahmad Hardy has been released from the hospital after being shot in the upper leg early Sunday morning, according to ESPN's Pete Thamel. Hardy plans to attend Missouri's campus immediately, plans to head to Missouri's campus immediately to begin rehabbing with the goal of playing this season. The 20-year-old Tiger star was shot at a concert in his native Mississippi, was taken to Forest General Hospital in Hattiesburg, where he had surgery. Laurel Police Sergeant Macon Davis told the Laurel Leader Call on Monday that at least two people were injured and three people of interest were in custody. First team All-SEC selection last year, Hardy ran for 1,700 yards, and the 20-year-old, I'm sure, very much welcome back with the Missouri Tiger football team. That is a great news item and update from Mizzou. Other news to get to, sometimes when your team hires a 65-year-old coach or a 70-year-old coach or a 75-year-old coach, you say, how much does this guy really have left in the tank? What the heck is going on here? That is not the case with the story we got out at ESPNSiouxFalls.com about the Iowa Hawkeyes yesterday. They are hiring an 87-year-old coach, but you got to love it. Here's why. The University of Iowa head football coach Kirk Ferentz announced Friday the hiring of former Hawkeye and longtime coach Tom Moore as a senior consultant to the head coach and offensive advisor. I have known Tom Moore for over a decade and am thrilled he has agreed to join our program in an advisory role. Coach Moore has had a long and successful career in football. He was a player at Iowa, coached at the collegiate level, spent many years working alongside Hall of Fame coaches in the NFL. I'm grateful that a four-time Super Bowl champion will share his wisdom and perspectives with us, coaches and players. Moore is 87. Again, not a full-time role, not an on-field, crazy, strenuous deal, but 87 years old, an advisor to the program, senior consultant, and of course, offensive advisor. If you're not familiar with Tom Moore, if you watched Peyton Manning in the late 90s, mid-2000s, early 2010s, there was some dude looking pretty darn grumpy on the sideline with a headset on and his glasses down by the bridge of his nose. That is Tom Moore, the engineer, the architect of that Peyton Manning offense, the slow it down, read at the line of scrimmage, that dude that pushed Manning to be so darn great. He's now a member of the Iowa Hawkeye program. And the cool thing about all of this is it comes back full circle. Tom Moore, been around the game of football for more than six decades, lettered for the Hawkeyes in 1959 and 1960 as a quarterback and place kicker, and then started his coaching career in 61 and 62 in Iowa City as a GA, has made so many stops along the way, been around elite talent, recently with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, four-time Super Bowl winner Tom Moore, an advisory role, but a really cool story out of the NFL and college football centered around the Iowa Hawkeyes. The Green Bay Packers have claimed not one, but two recently cut players off of waivers. Green Bay added tight end and Iowa alum Luke Lachey and cornerback MJ Devonshire. With these additions, the Packers roster now full. The two vacancies created when Green Bay failed a physical for tight end Ine Falai out of Wake Forest, and kicker Brandon McManus was released just this week. Lachey was picked in the seventh round of the 2025 draft out of Iowa by the Houston Texans, and Devonshire little bit more on him. He was drafted also in round 7 of the 2024 draft class, and both of these guys are going to be back-end roster competition. Two-year starter at Pittsburgh, Devin Shire, a perimeter cornerback in head coach Pat Narduzzi's zone-heavy scheme, and Luke Lachey can slot in, maybe, into a bigger opportunity because we're not so sure about Tucker Kraft's week one status. Of course, we want to be bullish on it and say he'll be back, no doubt about it. But if the Packers slow roll him back like they're going to slow roll Micah back into the lineup, there's opportunity for Green Bay. Lachey will compete with Drake Dabney, Messiah Swinson, RJ Maryland for the fourth tight end spot on the 53-man roster. But I'm going to tell you, Tucker Kraft is a roster lock, hopefully future Hall of Famer in Green Bay, stays there his whole career, has a nice, long, amazing career. But behind him, there's a lot up for grabs. You got Luke Musgrave, you got Josh Wiley, and then the aforementioned names. There is a lot of different opportunity there behind Tucker Kraft, and certainly an intriguing signing, Luke Lachey at tight end, cornerback, which the Packers also need depth at, MJ Devonshire, the recent signing as of yesterday. Cowboys wide receiver George Pickens signed his franchise tag before the beginning of the month. Executive Vice President Stephen Jones said soon after the team expected Pickens to show up at voluntary work. Monday was the first team workout for the Cowboys since Pickens signed his $27.3 million one-year deal. But Pickens was not present. Nothing mandatory until June 16th, so he can stay away until then without being fined. But ideally, when you work out a deal, you sign a tag, you have some communication, you cross a picket line of sorts there on the franchise tag negotiation, you expect, you know what, let's get him in here. Let's do this. But the reports out there last month about we're not going to work out a long-term deal with George Pickens. Now we're seeing maybe a little retribution here, not showing up for the initial start of voluntary offseason work. Another notable passing to talk about from the sports world this week, Charlie Young, an all-pro tight end who helped the Niners win their first Super Bowl, passed away at the age of 75, Niners said Tuesday they were told of Young's death by his wife. No cause of death disclosed. Young played 13 years in the NFL for the Eagles, Rams, Niners, and Seahawks. His greatest individual success coming with Philly before he later joined San Fran and helped launch the dynasty started by Hall of Fame coach Bill Walsh. Rest in peace, Charlie Young. Great tight end, former All-Pro, passing away at the age of 75. Well, we want grass and high quality grass. That's the word from the NFLPA. While NFL players watch some of their stadiums get new grass fields installed for the upcoming FIFA World Cup games, it only reinforces their desire to move away from turf. 15 of the 30 NFL stadiums use some sort of artificial turf for American football games. Players have become more vocal in recent years about their desire to play on grass. NFLPA executive director, former Packer J.C. Treader, said recently on the Not Just Football podcast, "We want good grass fields, good solid fields. You don't just want to pull out the municipal golf course grass on every field. You want high quality surfaces. I think one thing is understanding what our players care about, and there is something there that the data hasn't been able to spit back out at us, which is if you ask every player that we polled, 92% say they want grass over turf." And the NFL a couple years ago, if you recall, came out with this study that said injuries had no impact in terms of turf versus grass. It was the same between the two, and that was their study that they released. But the NFL is a screaming freight train on the loose, runaway truck down an incredibly steep decline, and they continue to make money hand over fist and innovate and go to new markets and continue to talk about what's on the horizon. Everything on the NFL calendar, we're talking schedule release here in a minute, everything on the calendar is the world's biggest deal. Hey, this Monday Night Football game for Week 7, bigger deal, more clicks than a massive story out of the NHL. More clicks than the gem of a performance from Bailey Ober, Paul Skeens, Mizorowski out of Major League Baseball, competing with the NBA postseason, with announcement of regular season football games. So pardon me if I have an issue with the NFL, a league that has out of control hand over fist earnings and growth potential and finding ways, weaving ways into households and days of the week and new games and new markets like we've never seen before, continues to grow at an unbelievable rate. Why wouldn't you give the players what they want? Not everything they want, but what they want. You can put out studies and say, you know, we had 16 ACLs or 16 Achilles injuries on grass and we had this many on turf. There it is. There's the science. We're sticking with what we got. There's no issue. Why wouldn't you listen from your employees to make them as happy as possible? Because they're certainly making you as happy as possible. And if the NFLPA puts out a poll, 1,700 players polled, 92% of them say they want grass over turf. I don't know what the 8% is, but 92% is a pretty strong majority last time I checked. And the NFL should move to grass as often as feasibly possible, make it as uniform as possible, make the players as happy as you can, because after all, they're the backbone of your league. You stand on their shoulders. They raised it to new heights. You look back at the past and the ceremonies and the guys that come out and speak and make a difference in their communities, and you praise those things. You praise the guys that walk up on the stage at the NFL draft and give up their time to be a part and engage with the fans. But you also spurn away these guys, and you still have some healthcare issues in the CBA. Maybe that gets fixed before too long. It makes a lot of sense to play football on grass, especially when the players, the people that are sacrificing life and limb out there, career prospects getting hurt, they're telling you what they believe, what they want, what they need to succeed, be successful, happy and healthy out there on a football field. Maybe it just makes too much sense for the NFL to say, okay, we'll go back to grass the way it was a while ago instead of this turf that many players, some would say 92% of, would prefer to play on the grass. That's the latest there. 6 months removed from tearing his left ACL, an injury update for Atlanta Falcon quarterback Michael Penix Jr. as he's returned to the field. Falcons posted a video yesterday of Penix throwing to wide receiver Drake London at the team's facility in Flowery Branch, Georgia. Team spokesperson said Penix is participating in phase two of the Falcons offseason program, looking to work his way back and compete with Tua Tagovailoa for the starting QB spot. And lastly, if Aaron Rodgers returns to play quarterback for the Steelers this year, he'll be part of the NFL's first game in Paris, when Pittsburgh plays the Saints at Stade de France in Week 7. The NFL on Wednesday revealed the matchups of their international slate, and unfortunately, the Green Bay Packers are not going international this year. Five international games: Niners and Rams in Melbourne Week 1, Ravens and Cowboys in Rio Week 3, Colts, Commanders, Eagles, Jags, Texans, Jags in London Week 4, 5, and 6. Then you got Steelers, Saints Week 7 in Paris, Bengals, Falcons in Madrid Week 9, Patriots, Lions meet in Munich Week 10, and the Minnesota Vikings are heading south of the border to Mexico City to take on the San Francisco 49ers in week number 11. That's the international slate in a hurry. That's the latest NFL news, Packers signing, schedule leaks, and more. When we come back, we'll talk to somebody who really knows what he's talking about. That's Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report, all things football, continuing the rest of the way on this Wednesday, May 13th edition of Overtime. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.
ESPN Sioux Falls gets you back to more of Overtime with Burt Ramin on ESPN 102.3 and AM 1000 KSOO, Sioux Falls sports leader.
Right back with you, sent to round out and wrap up a fun Wednesday, middle of the week edition of Overtime with one of our favorites. Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report is our guest right now. BleacherReport.com, the one-stop shop. You can find your latest NFL news, news around the sports world, including top options for the top pick of the 2027 NFL draft. We're not talking about that right now. We're going to talk about the 2026 draft with our buddy Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report. Brent, always great to talk to you. How you doing this week?
I'm doing well, and as you rightly stated, this today I have the top options for 2027 draft. I'm already writing which quarterbacks can challenge those guys in 2027. That's how far along I already am when it comes to the NFL draft. It just never stops, my friend. It never stops.
You're doing great work as always, man. It's always great to follow along. I wanted to ask you, though, as a guy that has been around the Browns organization, talked about the Browns for a while, what do you make of the quarterback train wreck disaster right now? But in addition to that, if you were in charge, which one of these five, which feels like 45 options at quarterback, are you starting week one, and why?
Well, look, where they're at is a perfect encapsulation of everything that's gone wrong because of the franchise's choices. Let's just make that clear from the start, right? Because of what they decided to do with Baker Mayfield, in turn bringing in Deshaun Watson, is exactly why they are where they are. If you are good enough to have a top five defense, the reigning NFL Defensive Player of the Year, who set a record with sacks last year, and it was good enough to get you five wins. That shows you how important the quarterback position is in today's game, right?
Yep.
And for them, considering where they are financially, you should move forward with Shedeur Sanders, because not only is it important to see what he has this year for the future, his future, but also the future of your position. And that, to me, that's important, because in no way am I moving forward to Deshaun Watson. We're now 5+ years removed since he was a legitimate NFL starter, with multiple injuries along the way, and plus all the off-field issues as well, and not to mention the egg on the face of the organization of how they went about that process. I want to see what upside you have there, because that's really what this entails, right? You made all these trades to accumulate draft picks for 2027. Well, the reason why teams like Cleveland are doing it, or the New York Jets, or anyone along those lines that are in a quarterback for next year's class, is because it's on paper, it's currently loaded. And that's where the real ability to know where you're going as an organization is important. So you start Shedeur, see if he sinks or swims, and then it will determine what you do moving forward going into next offseason.
That's the latest on the Cleveland Browns quarterback mess. Our guest right now, Brent Sobleski, the Bleacher Report. Let's talk NFL draft. It feels like it was a while ago, really 2-3 weeks ago. As you rewind and take a look, give me one or two winners that stood out to you. I know a lot of people really liked what the New York teams did, especially on night one.
You're absolutely correct. And the Jets were the first team that came to mind. Now, again, they're in the same position as Cleveland is, because they weren't able to select a quarterback. They weren't into that in a slot capable of it, particularly with New York, because of Dante Moore going back to Oregon for another year, where he would likely have been that selection. But they have elevated the floor to that entire roster, and that's what's important, right? When you're essentially the worst team in football a year ago, how can you make your team better, even if you can't get better at the game's most important position? And I believe they've done that this offseason through trades, through free agency, and specifically through the draft, when you have multiple first-round picks, and one of them you trade up for, obviously. But at the same time, just getting good football players that fit what you want to be as an organization from a philosophical perspective. And that's what impressed me about the Jets. And it's not just, you know, at the top of the class, you're adding in a David Bailey. But at the same time, I love D'Angelo Pons. It was arguably my favorite player in this year's class. And you have him going to Aaron Glenn, with their similarities in when Glenn was a player. So I love that. The other one I will say is this, and I know it's a bit of a cop-out just because they own the number one overall pick, but it finally feels like the Raiders mm-hmm. are on track. And Fernando Mendoza was a legitimate number one overall pick. Anyone that watched Indiana last year, seeing his poise, his toughness, how he elevated what was a moribund program that was known as a basketball school for decades and decades, says so much about who he is as a person, but also as a player on the field. And I think that gets the Raiders finally on track to do something and build something, which they've been incapable of doing for, well, essentially since the early 2000s when they made the Super Bowl against Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
There's a couple winners for you in the wake of the NFL draft. We're continuing our conversation with Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report on this Wednesday edition of Overtime. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO. Brent, what was your initial reaction to the Ty Simpson selection at pick 13? And as the dust settled, did your opinion change at all?
Surprising, but logical. Mm-hmm. If that doesn't come across as an oxymoron. It's surprising because it was that high in the process, but it's logical based on creating a succession line at quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams. Look, we know Matthew Stafford is 38 years old. His injury history is quite lengthy, and some serious injuries as well. Furthermore, it has been reported at least the last two off seasons that he seriously considered retirement. I know in the short term, you are trying to win now. They can compete at a Super Bowl caliber level, especially if Stafford is maintaining an MVP caliber performance as he did last year, where he was absolutely exceptional as the best quarterback in the NFL. But you can't necessarily bank on that. You can't necessarily bank on him being healthy the entire year. And even if he is, which is best case scenario, you still need someone in the long term. And they had an opportunity to do so. Let's not forget, they had a second first round pick. They just traded it for Trent McDuffie. He's an all-pro caliber cornerback. So they got instant help through this year's draft just through different means and a different avenue. So I look at them and say to myself, they're still capable of winning at the highest level. And maybe they could have used a Mekhi Lemon, or maybe they could have used a Kenyon Sadiq. But at the same time, this is a team as an organization. You're not just looking for now. You're looking for 4, 5, 6, 7 years down the road, and that's why you bring in Ty Simpson.
Brent, what's the best landing spot among these three middle-round quarterbacks? You got Carson Beck heading to the Arizona Cardinals, Cade Klubnik to the Jets, Drew Aller to the Steelers. Is one of those beds cozier than another? Which one?
I would say Aller to the Steelers just because of organizational obstinance. And I mean that because the Steelers operate in a certain manner, and they have for decades. Some, like myself, would say that they've kind of fallen out of the trends of where the league is going and feel that they can be Super Bowl contenders each and every year because that's what the Steelers have always been. In reality, they haven't been for 5 years or more since essentially Ben Roethlisberger retired. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers comes back for another year. That is not a Super Bowl contending team. They are stuck in the worst place you can be in the NFL, which is mediocrity. You're not bad enough to get up to have a high quarterback selection, but you're not good enough to compete at the highest level for a championship, and that's where they're stuck. So the reason why I bring up Aller is because of that organizational obstinance, meaning they could potentially see his upside. And don't forget, Aller was largely considered a potential first-round prospect going into the 2025 season. If you can refine his mechanics, put him in a system that fits his, is tailored to his skill set, you may have something there, especially when you have DK Metcalf on the outside. You bring in Michael Pittman. You trade up for Jeremy Bernard in the second round. There is talent there. As long as you develop him properly, a year behind Aaron Rodgers, and if not two, and then you could have a starting quarterback in the long term, which will then allow the organization to maybe finally take off by investing minimal, yet with high-end return possibility. So I like Aller. I like just the whole setup for him compared to the other two, where it's a lot dicier.
Talking with Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report. You can find your latest and greatest sports news there, bleacherreport.com. There's been a lot of talk, an uptick in talk this week, Brent, much to the chagrin of yours truly, about the NFC North. My Packers are not getting mentioned positively. Everybody wants to talk about how great the Bears are, how awesome Caleb Williams is. There's also people this morning on ESPN saying Kyler Murray's the best quarterback in the division. Calm me down a bit. Where do you stand on the NFC North? Give me your take on all four squads that feel like anybody could win this thing this year.
Well, to be fair, I don't think any of them significantly improved this offseason. I really don't. And that's probably a testament to just how each of them operated individually. It just happens to be that they're all in the same same division. You know, with Green Bay, you may take a step back defensively, right? You lose your defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley, to a head coaching job. So there's going to be a transition there to some degree. Also, you're kind of turning over your secondary some and bringing in talent and losing some along the way. You're still wondering where Micah Parsons is going to be from a health perspective, and that's a potential big deal. So I think there's a transition phase there with the Packers. So you're not making as much headway along the way. The Vikings, let me put it this way. I was talking with one of Bleacher Report scouts that does the NFL draft, and he's looking at NFL quarterbacks, and he was going through the Arizona Cardinals, and he evaluated when he based off the film last year, Jacoby Brissett was a better quarterback than Kyler Murray. So are you finally going to get the most out of Kyler Murray? And that's really the concern, because we've been asking it now for 7 years, and we just haven't seen it, and that's concerning. And not only is that concerning, but the same statement applies to J.J. McCarthy, right? So, and then for me, and I know there's plenty of listeners probably out there ready to lambaste me because I gave the Caleb Banks pick in the first round a flat-out F. I did. I did not like it. Not that he doesn't have that first-round ability, but three major injuries to the same foot on a 320-plus pound man is always concerning. So you have that as well. And with the Bears, right, I think they're still in the same range, but where did you get better? And that's the question. And I don't have an answer because they really didn't in any specific area. You trade DJ Moore, You didn't bring anyone else in, but you expect Luther Burden to step up, right? You add more to tight end. I mean, we're going to have 14 personnel at this point all the time. So to me, looking at the Bears, I think that you lose your top two safeties who started all 19 games. You obviously bring in Feinman and Bryant, but that's basically a wash between those situations. And you didn't add more pass rush. So in each of those scenarios, of those three, the three that are usually in that conversation, to me, I don't think any of them really improved themselves to the point where, hey, this is now the runaway favorite in the division.
Brent, before we cut you loose, man, always great to talk ball with you. The Bleacher Report, bleacherreport.com. Is there a team that you feel pretty darn good about that might not be in the top echelon of odds? You got Rams, Seahawks, Ravens, Bills, Eagles, Chargers in the top six right now. Chiefs, Packers, Pats, and the Niners rounding out the top 10. Is there a team I didn't mention that you feel pretty darn high on that might not be up near the top at this stage for Super Bowl odds?
Yeah, I'm going to go with a surprise pick, the Tennessee Titans. Mm. No, I'm not being serious, but the fact that they changed their uniforms to look like the Oilers, they got all the kudos from me. And I will give them all the credit in the world this offseason. But I will stay in the AFC South, and it's not the team you're probably thinking. It's not the Houston Texans. I'm thinking the Indianapolis Colts, because have we already forgotten what they accomplished through the first 10 weeks of last year, where they were the best team in football before they were absolutely ravaged by injuries, right? Specifically to Daniel Jones. We just saw reports within the last day. They expect him to be ready much sooner than later. This isn't something they're expecting to last into the season. So if you have Daniel Jones playing like he was, then you add and get more athletic defensively and faster and younger, which they had to, because that was really their biggest issue last year. Even without a first-round pick, C.J. Allen in the second round is arguably one of the best selections in the entire draft class, because he will be inserted day one as a middle linebacker wearing the green dot and calling plays. That's a team I won't completely brush under the rug like a lot of people have, just because of how they ended the season, because what I'm remembering is how good they were when they were mostly healthy to start the season, and we can't entirely forget that, and making them team better.
The Indianapolis Colts are certainly far down right now, plus 6,500. Not as far down as Tennessee, man. That would have surprised me, but certainly I agree with the uniform upgrade in Nashville. That's Brent Sobleski of the Bleacher Report. Man, you're the best. Always great to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, as always.
All right. There's your football fill, football fiesta here to end a Wednesday edition of Overtime. We will talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. as we clear the airwaves early for the Minnesota Twins. They'll be on the air at noon. Overtime tomorrow, 10 to noon. We'll talk to you then when the next edition of the show rolls right back around on your Sioux Falls sports leader. It's ESPN 102.3 AM 1000 KSOO.